Well, there is some weather out there. There is a lot of flooding and more storms and more storms coming up the California coast. So this is a result of El Nino, which they have already stated has got more energy in it than any El Nino they've ever measured. So we've got a lot of rain coming in, flooding. And we've got snow up in the Sierra Nevadas. And it was funny. They had said that the weather people had said, was doing some research, and I had run across the story where they said that the storms that had come into North Carolina, when you remember that there was flooding in North Carolina a few months ago, they said something along the lines of, 5 days of flooding in North Carolina, what the amount of water that came in there would have wiped out the flood, all of the flood in California. So we've just been having some really extraordinary weather out there. I've got a little clip for you. And Hillary might be in a little bit of trouble. She's got people in the party that are starting to work against her. So that's something to keep an eye on. But she's seems to have a very, very, very tenuous hold on. It was just kind of like last time when she got knocked off the perch. And then there is some strange things coming in about Islam on the one hand. Some sort of either spontaneous or giant planned sex attack in Germany. And the mayor of the city where they were at said, ladies, you just need to be more careful. And, at some point, Angela Merkel is going to look like an idiot when these type of things don't get better, they get worse. And now there's a story that's come out on the hidden gay world in radical Islam. It's all fascinating. We'll get to that. I've got Steve Pierce calling in today and have another guest as well. But here is a little bit from your coastal storm.
Well, it hasn't just been the rain that's been coming down out to the west. Plenty of snow, too, with these systems. There's a look at Flagstaff, Arizona, where 12 inches has come down so far. We've also seen snow move through Washington, Colorado, and Wyoming. There's a look at Spokane. They've been getting hit pretty hard. Now, we're still dealing with winter storm watches and warnings for the interior west, really into the weekend. So it is going to continue to be a tough go with an additional 5 to 8 inches in and around the Flagstaff area. You could even see some higher isolated amounts. And it's not just the snow. The rain is going to continue through the weekend too, with another system swinging in by Saturday, a massive drop, an additional 1 to 2, and in some cases through parts of southern Arizona, 2 to 3 inches.
So we're looking at getting a spillover from that storm coming in as well, 2 to 3 inches all across Arizona, means that we're going to probably undoubtedly have our own pile up down here. And you've got right here a little bit more. I think this is a different story. It might be the same one the way it's loading up. But they've had an incredible amount of rain and snow in the Pacific Northwest. And now it's starting to come down and pound California, where they've been complaining about the drought. And it's been a multi-billion dollar drought. And they've had to take a lot of aversive. Yeah, this is just the same thing. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know there is a lot of stuff coming down. And Thursday's forecast, it looks like it's skirting around Las Cruces, but through Friday, it's definitely going to come down here and pound. And you've got rain in the El Paso, across the bottom of New Mexico, probably over until you get underneath Alamogordo-Cladcroft line. And then there's nothing to the right of that. But above that, and we're not talking too many miles above us, we're talking some snow, too. So we're going to have some weather here. And they do have flood alerts and flood watches from above Santa Barbara all the way down to San Diego. So there's just a ton of water coming through those areas. And I think that, okay, so I've got another clip here. Mudslides and tornadoes reported in California.
California has been getting pounded with storms, and that's the result. Flooded out roads. We've seen mudslides. Check that out in Glendora. Also in North Ventura, check out that mudslide. That has been a major problem over the past couple of days. We've also had a lot of highway closures, as you can imagine, with all that going on. And this is one of two tornadoes that were reported yesterday. This one touched down in San Benito County. The other one was spotted near the Orange County and the San Diego County border. Also, some San Diego beaches had to be evacuated as the surf became more intense. A lot going on, but good news is we're getting a little bit of a lull in these storm systems. So Thursday and Friday, it's a bit of a break along the coast. Saturday, the next system comes in. That will bring an additional 1 to 2 inches of rain.
Well, they desperately need it, and it's a shame that they don't have the infrastructure down in Southern California to catch a lot of this, because they had enough storage areas and ways to get that the water out of the Los Angeles River, for example, that I'm sure their troubles would be over very quickly indeed. All right. I've been following this story a little bit more with Peyton Manning. And it just seems to me the question of whether he used HGH, I would say it there is no reason to even doubt anymore that Peyton's house got HGH sent to it. So now the question is, and it was a series of shipments. And I just think that, you know, we've got to be realistic about this. We've got to be realistic about this, because Peyton Manning was going through an extremely difficult period in his life, and was not sure if he'd ever get a chance to play again, let alone to compete at the highest levels. And he says to this day he doesn't have feeling in his fingers. So we know that he was very, very worried about his health. Although he did say something that was incorrect, he said, I essentially, when he defended himself, he said that his neck was, he was essentially dealing with a broken neck, which is not true at all. He had a bulging disc. He had a bulging disc, and it was affecting, it was pinching his nerve. So he was just trying to get back on the field, but you know, he might've been scared for his health, he never had a broken neck. And I think it's, inappropriate to for him to say that, but I think he was trying to make the point that the trying to multitask here. Sorry about that. He's trying to get back on the field, which I don't blame him. But I mean, if he just stood up there and said, "Yes, I had my wife order it. I was very afraid for my health. I wasn't worried at that point about playing again," I think there'd be a lot of forgiveness. But I think it's gonna come out incrementally. Here's a little bit on the damage done to his reputation.
A spokesman for Peyton Manning says that Al Jazeera, that's the TV network, is backtracking from a report linking the quarterback to human growth hormone. My next guest thinks Peyton's reputation may already be damaged to some degree. Rich Salgado is here. Rich, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, Al Jazeera never actually said that Peyton Manning took HGH.
Mm-hmm.
They have said that his wife took a lot of delivery of that stuff. You're telling me that that diminishes his reputation and gets after him and his reputation?
Well, I think it just puts a little blotch right now, because you know what? You're innocent until proven guilt. Like you just said, his wife received the deliveries. Is there anything that says that he took it? Does anyone have it on film? Does anyone have it documented? Is there pictures? Nothing. There's no, you know, obviously it went to the same residency, but prove to me that he took it. He took it.
But it comes after other world-class athletes have said, "I didn't touch it," and then it's proved that they did touch it. This comes on the heels of the Lance Armstrongs of this world. That's why his reputation is, you know.
Well, I think he went and got, obviously we discussed earlier about the spokesperson that he has now.
That's Ari Fleischer.
And speaking on his behalf to sort of fix what damage or put damage control on this thing right now. But knowing Peyton, I've known him for years. And if you look at him, someone that uses HGH, and, you know, I'm not saying that he's not a top in shape person,
okay,
but you would put on a little bit of size. You would, you know, you use HGH is used for strength and muscle building.
That's what it's for.
And also, you know, we were joking around. I said, if I was on HGH, I don't need to, you know, you'd be eating cheesecakes like they're apples and you wouldn't put on any fat because it helps speed metabolism. And, you know, I don't know all the benefits of it, but, there, something's not making sense there.
But problem for Peyton Manning is that if he sues and says, "Hey, you defamed me," then everything comes out in court, and Al Jazeera can put everything on the table, all kinds of innuendo and everything else goes right out there. That's a tricky decision for Peyton.
Well, I mean, I just think that, and there's, I'll get to this story a little bit more. I just want to let you know that the guy who made the claim, there's a reason to believe that he's got a lot of credibility, even though these guys are selling, you know, stuff. One of the things to remember about Ashley Manning is that she took repeated delivery of illegal and banned substance in the house of an NFL player. What are the chances that it was for her? I'd say, in my opinion, probably zero. Anyway, 618 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and we'll take a little break. I've got to get into that story just a little bit more just to let you know what the details are.
I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. Got my mind set.
All right, so this is what we know about this story with Peyton Manning. He was charged with getting HGH sent to his house in the name of his wife, and the implication is that he used it, although Al Jazeera in this report did not say that he did that. Now, what we know about the guy who made the claim, Charles Sly, which you might think is a pretty good name for a character who's outing other people, very literary, but he's supposed to be just some flunky hanging around this this lab years later of where Ashley Manning got her substances. That's not true. He was a partner. He's a chemist. And he's a person that was an integral part of this company that has now been closed. And so one of the things that the New York Times says, and they've got a couple of good stories here, one of which is from January the 5th, 2 days ago. And then there's another one. That story is called Finding a Common Thread in Al Jazeera Doping Report. And the second one is from late December. And that one is called Claims of Peyton Manning, HGHU's Raise Nagging Questions. Now, if I was Ari Fleischer giving him advice and I knew that it was true, I would say, you know what? I did take it, and it was because I was worried about my health. I mean, are they really, at the end of his career, going to come after him and sanction him? I don't think so. I mean, even if they did, he could pull a Tom Brady and go to court. This is very likely, but not for sure, the last year of his career. I know he doesn't want to go out on a downer. He could just come out and say, I never took steroids or anything like that. This isn't a steroid. HGH is a growth hormone that's different than some anabolic steroids. And the only reason I took it was to regenerate my neck. It wasn't to play football. It was so that I could get feeling back in my hands and stuff. And if I was a PR guy and I knew it was going to come out, isn't that a lot less painful? So somehow we're supposed to believe that his wife, Ashley Manning, used a whole bunch of illegal stuff. It would be like buying any other steroids. It's illegal. What does she use? I mean, I understand she's got privacy and HIPAA to protect her health, but her health information. All right, here's the guy that made the report recanting.
My name is Charles Flood. It has come to my attention that the broadcaster Al Jazeera has somehow obtained recordings or communications of me making statements concerning a number of athletes and that Al Jazeera plans to air a program about them. Any recordings of me were made without my knowledge or consent. It is my belief that an individual named Liam Collins secretly made those recordings. Liam is a reputed fraudster who is banned in his native United Kingdom from running any investment businesses. The statements on any recordings or communications that Al Jazeera plans to air are absolutely false and incorrect. To be clear, I am recanting any such statements, and there is no truth to any statement of mine that Al Jazeera plans to air. Under no circumstances should any of those statements, recordings, or communications be aired.
All right, that's it on that. But here's the thing. He's in a room and for hours, tens of hours, talking about his company, what they're doing, and how they're moving this stuff around a worldwide web of illegal substances with trainers, you know, shady trainers. I just want you to remember something. Is this guy names a whole bunch of players, most of which were not famous, most of which would not jump off a page to you. And there's only a couple of players that anybody would take notice of. Obviously, Peyton Manning. Here's a second issue. This doctor, Guyron, who has the Sports Institute, whatever. This guy has already been prosecuted, caught, and prosecuted for selling HGH. So here's the question. One of the questions that was asked. Did the Indianapolis Colts really tell Peyton Manning to go to this clinic with this guy who is not an NFL approved doctor? Now, you've got to draw the conclusion on your own on that, which is absolutely not. Therefore, Peyton found it on his own. He was given information by somebody. This is what I believe. The only way to rehab your neck, because you've had four surgeries on your neck on a relatively minor issue, bulging discs, that have pinched nerves. It's not a broken neck. It wasn't close to a broken neck. And, you know, which I find bizarre that Peyton Manning said that his neck was essentially broken. His heart or his wallet might have been broken. But somebody might have said to him, you need these nerves to grow back. I mean, think about that. You need, because we know that nerves do regenerate themselves, but grow slowly. A lot of these nerves grow slowly. They regenerate themselves, but why not take a little bit of something to make them grow back faster? He doesn't really seem like a guy that ever needed to take steroids to get a step ahead. You know, he's not a running back, not a wide receiver. So anyway, I think it's going to come out that he did take this. I mean, what did his wife really take, like tens of thousands of dollars of growth hormone or what? But you know, really strange when you see a picture of Peyton Manning's forehead from when he was like in high school and now, and he looks like he belongs on Mount Rushmore. He's got the biggest forehead I've ever seen. It literally looks like Frankenstein's forehead. 6:30 on the button. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. I've got my texter back finally. I can't. It's so sad. It's been away so long. I forgot the number. 805-6180. 805-6180. I've got, I think, 57 texts on here waiting. So anyway, you can text me. And we're going to come back. Let's switch gears. I got Steve Pierce coming on at 6:45, and then I believe I've got a guest at 7. But I want to get into, when we come back, why don't we get into this gay Islam and the sex attack Islam thing? I think it's pretty fascinating. We'll be right back. It's gonna take money. It's gonna take plenty of money to do it right, child. It's gonna take time, a whole lot of precious time. It's gonna All right, so we've got this story here about the sex attack in New Year's Eve in Cologne, and the shameful response of the mayor of Cologne was, ladies, you need to be on guard, basically. The crazy idea is that Germany is going to bring in a million people from these areas and not be affected. It's a little bit sad. Here's a clip from that.
Last night, these women came together to support those who had suffered days earlier.
Come on, the perpetrators must be caught and brought to justice. Measures should be taken, and we should show solidarity amongst each other, men, women, foreigners, against violence.
Starting on the square in front of Cologne Cathedral, hundreds then made their way through the city, where dozens of women were sexually harassed, assaulted and mugged on New Year's Eve. Jenny had a firecracker put into her jacket, then her phone stolen.
I'm having some suspicions ahead, and then I've had this phone.
Then I heard a sizzling sound in my hood, and I somehow tried to get it out of my hood. Then it fell into my jacket and burned everything. The scars will stay. I was lucky that it didn't explode. My mobile phone was gone afterwards.
The attackers, who also targeted this area outside the main station, are described as young men of Arab or North African appearance, which has led to anti-migrant campaigners claiming this is proof Germany is letting in too many refugees. One woman who was there, though, said they look like regular pickpockets, and leaders are urging people not to come to foregone conclusions, but say they're taking swift action.
This morning, we developed measures which should prevent such incidents in the future. This is very important. It is also important that we don't let it take away from celebrating Carnival because of such incidents.
Well, there doesn't seem to be any sense of how serious this is. I mean, if this group of men gets together and coordinates a giant sex assault on these women, they must know that they're not going to be kicked out of the country. And the mayor is saying, you need to the women, don't be so friendly. It's an absolute joke. Here's a little bit from the CNN on it.
Day after the allegations of mass sexual assault were made public, Cologne continues to search for the perpetrators and for answers. How could things get so out of hand? More victims are coming forward and describing their harrowing experiences.
Aber dann wurden wir umzingelt von einer Truppe von ca. 20, 30.
Suddenly we were surrounded by a group of between 20 and 30 men. They were full of anger, and we had to make sure that no one of us was pulled away by them. They were grabbing us, and we were trying to get away as quickly as possible.
Police and witnesses continue to speak of a group of up to 1,000 men groping and often robbing women at Cologne's main railway station on New Year's Eve. More than 100 criminal complaints have already been filed. Germany's interior minister criticized the police's slow response to the violence and said authorities must do better in the future.
Well, I think the upshot of this story is that there's a lot that people don't understand. There's vast areas in the Middle East where men do not interact with women because the sexes are separated by culture and by law. Them into a society where there's not only just women around, but they're not wearing veils. Some of them wearing suggestive clothing, friendly, interacting with men on the same level. I'm not saying that the suggestive clothing has anything to do with it, but the kind of clothing that a Muslim woman would never wear. I'm sure that a lot of these men are totally overwhelmed by this. At the same time, in these cultures, women are looked down on. They're second-class citizens. And, you know, you can't. Under traditional Sharia law, it's almost impossible to prosecute somebody for rape. All right, we'll take a break here. We got Steve Pierce calling in just a minute. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm going to pick up the gay thread of this on the other side of the hour.
Hey, Kelly, it's Megan. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I have Congressman Steve Pierce ready to chat with you in just a moment, whenever you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, great. One moment. I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
Thanks.
Hey, boss. How you doing?
Good, Steve. How's it going?
Good. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy anniversary, whatever the case is.
You too, man. You too. Well, yeah. I got rid of all the ads for the last part of the show, so we're good to go here. We're on the air right now in about 3 seconds.
All right.
All right. So we've got Steve Pierce here, and good morning, Steve. How's it going?
It is going well. We are back in D.C. We got out of the snow of eastern New Mexico and back into the clear air here. New Mexico didn't get the memo on global warming.
Yeah, a few of those floating around.
Yeah. So, we hit the ground running yesterday. We passed the full, not a full repeal, but the basic repeal of the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and now the president has to make a decision. You know, people keep saying, well, it's just show that whatever. No, anytime you can make an elected official take a stance, then you're doing significant things because he's been able to bob and weave, sort of like the Muhammad Ali phrase.
Rope-a-dope.
By, you know,
rope-a-dope.
Rope-a-dope. Yeah. And so he's been able to bob and weave. People, the middle class is basically hurting very badly because of this. We've seen some people moved to part-time. Some people laid off completely to get companies below the 50 threshold. We've seen people lose their plans. Access to health care has been diminished. Costs are tremendously higher than what they proposed. And so now then, we, the House, we, the Senate, Republicans, have put in front of the president a chance to repeal the thing and start from scratch. And so he'll make that decision. When he vetoes it now, he can no longer say, well, I would have done something and Congress just couldn't act. So I think it's extremely important that we sent that on the way yesterday.
All right. Well, just to reiterate your point, there's an article that was just came out yesterday that said most Americans are one paycheck away from insolvency.
That's true, and the Affordable Care Act has made it worse. I just read an article about a month ago that talked about the numbers of hours worked have gone down for Americans. So the Obama administration is talking about the increase in jobs, but those are part-time jobs, and a lot of it is because of the Affordable Care Act. And so the basic American is just hanging on by a thread. The expenses under the Obamacare are extraordinarily high, and I've talked to many New Mexicans, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents who said we just had to give up our health care because we couldn't afford it. Their plan maybe was that $250 a month had gone up to $500 a month. They said we don't have another $250 in the paycheck. So this thing that was supposed to help people has in fact hurt people. Why don't we just erase it? There are provisions, the 26, you know, staying on it. If you're a student on your parents' plan is good. Some of the exchange parts are suitable. And so let's use the good. Let's start from scratch. Let's go back to what we had before. We had the world's best healthcare system. People came from around the world. So let's go back to that and make the improvements that we should have made.
Steve, here's the article, Most Americans Are One Paycheck Away from the Street, published from MarketWatch.com. Some 63% of people can't deal with a $500 emergency, and yet the government is expecting people to either cough up an increased amount every month for their health care or to pay a penalty.
And the penalties are going to become more extreme as we move forward because the government is going to try to force you into doing something that you might choose not to do. Now, our Constitution prohibits this, but this is where Judge Roberts and his Supreme Court got into such deep water in saying that, oh, this wasn't the coercion. This wasn't the government telling you how to do it. It's simply a tax. At the moment they made the decision, and it is flawed thinking today, which is now being characterized in your article that people can't pay the bill.
Sadly. Okay. So people wanted to know about this. A lot of people were angry at Paul Ryan for this bill that he put together with Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi said he didn't fight back, but he said it was John Boehner's fault. Could you just shed some light on the whole thing?
Well, Boehner, back before he got canned, excuse me, he did pass the format that said that we're going to spend this much money in the next year. He made it a temporary thing, only 3 months. So that ran out December the 11th. After he did that, then he stepped down, and Paul Ryan was to an extent handcuffed. Now, the bill that was put forward had some dramatic wins in it. It had some very bad stuff that I agree with. But the dramatic wins for New Mexico was the export of oil. We're already shipping New Mexico oil around the world. They started loading in the tankers the next day after the ink dried. It wasn't like it's going to be 3 years and it'll phase in. So that's going to improve economy in New Mexico. When oil and gas improves, then the New Mexico budget improves. That means that teachers' pay is more secure. 40% of the money that goes into, say, teachers' pay or other programs comes from the oil and gas economy. So that was very positive. We got full funding to continue the cleanup of WIP, which is good for the nation. It's good for New Mexico. We have the U.S. has had a horrible policy in the recent years, the last 10 years or so, with businesses not knowing what they're going to be able to write off. So they couldn't invest in new equipment, new machinery, because they literally didn't know what the tax treatment was going to be.
This is called amortization, right? And it allows businesses to write off progressively every year the worth of their equipment.
Yes.
So that they can get a tax benefit from that.
They didn't know what the law was until the last day of the year for the last 10 years. So one of the agreements in this whole end of the year package was that we made most of those tax rules permanent, so that now then companies can buy equipment. I've already run into farmers, pecan farmers, saying that she wanted to buy equipment, but literally didn't know if she's going to be able to ride it off until the 25th day of December. Well, that's extraordinarily flawed tax policy. So we made those ones that we didn't get permanent, most of them went into a five-year category, not just a 360-day category. So we got some huge wins that I think will stabilize the economy, that will stabilize New Mexico's economy, per se. And so just, yes, it was messy. And typically I vote against these things, but I was right in the thick of the whole oil and gas discussion, talking people into it. At some point I said, okay, I just hold my nose and vote for the good things. And the bad things literally are only a 9-month thing. All of the provisions that people are angry about run out in 9 months, but we get permanent disability to export oil. I think we can break the back of OPEC with that export thing.
Well, that's great. Now,
Russia.
Steve, people are still very, very upset about the Planned Parenthood thing, and that's another thing that they were upset with Paul Ryan. Is there any movement to primary Paul Ryan?
I'm not sure, and I think that he'll be okay. People are angry about Planned Parenthood. I've got those calls myself. They're valid. But my point was that discussion is far from over, and the full defunding of Planned Parenthood placed in this repeal of Obamacare that was passed yesterday. So it's now on the president's desk. If he chooses to sign it or not sign it, then that's his choice. But even if he vetoes that, we're still going to come back, and Planned Parenthood is in the crosshairs. The offensive things that came to light through the videos have not just gone away. We haven't forgotten them. It's just...
two to 3,000 Syrians. People want to know what the future holds in terms of bringing in foreigners that have at possibly the highest levels of danger.
That's another one of the disappointing things from that end of year package, is that we did not get that restriction in. I mean, there was a group of us who were so angry about the negotiations that we insisted on a meeting with the negotiators, the staffers who negotiated. That meeting was rambunctious enough that Speaker Ryan said, hey, I want to follow up. Let's get together again tomorrow. And so the five of us that were in there came 25 the next day. He sat down with the negotiators and we talked through all of these points. They had compelling reasons that literally the whole thing just would come to a standstill. The government would shut down. Ryan did not want to start the first month of his tenure with the shutdown. So it was basically a provision that was lost. I think the president is going to continue to bring in Syrians in great numbers. I think they're going to continue to mislead the American people, us in the House, to fight back. And this is where we're going to prove up if Paul Ryan is equal to the task. Right now, he's been very steady under fire. He doesn't flinch. He's able to articulate our positions. He's earning respect kind of each day that we go forward. And believe me, when the unsettlement with Mr. Boehner and then followed on a week or two later with Mr. McCarthy, those two things caused great just unsettlement. The waters were choppy inside the Republican conference.
I'll bet.
But he's aware of that. And so everybody wants us to succeed, but we're just tired of capitulating and never getting anything back. So we'll see.
All right. Well, we got a couple minutes left. On the bright side, what are we looking forward to this year?
Well, I think that we're going to go ahead and articulate the conservative points that Mr. Boehner typically did not talk about. Mr. Ryan is very good at getting out right in front of people, taking questions from people who disagree with him. Mr. Boehner was not comfortable doing that. I think that we're going to be successful in articulating how we view the future of the country. And we're going to be able to contrast that with the way the president views it or the way the Democrat candidate for president views it either. Sanders, who is a socialist, or Hillary Clinton, who is trying to run neck and neck with him in that regard. So we will be able to differentiate ourselves and have a clear vision for the country. I think that just this revision of the tax rules is just very positive for jobs down the future. And that's what people are looking for. What can we do to stabilize our future and economic growth of jobs?
Yeah, well, that's
so
great.
I think that's going to be positive.
That's great. Well, Steve, and we've just got a minute left, but it's been a collapse in the petroleum sector. Is it going to be stabilized? Is it going to get reversed, the prices?
I think that this is going to take a little bit of time. The Saudi Arabians were basically trying to kill our industry. And when we could not fight back and take their markets away from them, then it was simply like playing defense. So it'll take some time, but we're going to start pulling markets away from the Russians, away from the Saudi Arabians, away from Venezuela. I think that we can break the back of oak, and I think that that's going to be good for American jobs.
Good for the world.
Good for the world, absolutely. It'll put us back on a free market system. So we'll see the price hover here at a low point, but the Saudis are already having tremendous problems holding the value of their currency stable. So you can watch those things, and you can see the fracturing up of these illusions that have literally taken jobs from America for the last 40 years. We've made a dramatic reversal in that regard.
Well, Steve, we're out of time pretty much, but I want to thank you for taking the time to contact me and set up this last-minute interview. We're very appreciative of what you're doing in D.C. When can we get you in the actual studio?
Well, I haven't seen that far ahead on the schedule. We go into a series of retreats here early in January, so I suspect it's going to be February after. But I always love coming in and spending the hour with you. We'll do it again.
Well, tell your fellow Republicans we're sick of retreating.
Well, that's true. and literally that message is out.
All right,
yeah,
thanks.
We lost the Speaker of the House over that exact thing.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a
have a great day. Take
all
care.
Right.
We'll talk to you soon. All right, folks. Got to head Steve Pierce there, and we'll take a break, and I've got a guest in at the next hour. Kelly O'Connell, 659 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-6180 to text.
I got my mind set on. I got my mind set on. My mind set on. This time I know it's real. The feeling that I feel. I know what I put my mind to. I know that I really could do it. I got my mind set on you.
It's 7:06. Today is the 7th of December. There is a ton of flooding out in California and Washington and Oregon, my old stomping grounds. In the meanwhile, in the studio, though, we've got Patty Comco, and she's president of Leadership New Mexico, and also a friend of mine, Russell Allen, who is currently on the board of Leadership New Mexico and is also helping out down at the Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, and great to have you guys in the studio.
Morning, Kelly.
So we've been talking about having you guys on for a while, and would you mind giving folks, before we get into the Leadership New Mexico, just a little bit of background on yourself?
On myself? Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm president of Leadership New Mexico. I'm one of the two co-founders. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year.
Wow.
We have three different programs. We have over 1,300 graduates from 84 different communities around New Mexico.
Including Steve Pierce.
Including Steve Pierce. Yep. Steve was running your previous guest on the show. Steve was running his primary campaign back in 2002 when he went through our core program.
Wow. And he changed. He grew. The little oak acorn turned into the mighty oak. Okay, so tell us about Leadership New Mexico.
Well, as I mentioned, we've been around 20 years. We have three programs, one for senior leadership, which Steve and actually Russell is a graduate of as well. We have a Connect New Mexico program. It's specifically for 25 to 40-year-olds. And we have a local government leadership program. Our mission is education. We do not take a stand on issues. We just want to provide the best possible education we can on the issues that face New Mexico.
All right, so is there a political orientation or is it it's nonpartisan?
Nonpartisan completely.
All right. Okay, so where is Leadership New Mexico located?
We're located in Albuquerque, although we are statewide, but our headquarter office is in downtown Albuquerque.
All right, and if people wanted to contact you or interested in what they've heard about, how would they get a hold of you?
Easy to search us on the web. It's www.leadershipnm.org.
That's easy enough. Okay, so what has Leadership New Mexico been up to?
Well, oh my goodness, lots. You know, our core program is still strong. We're still educating senior leaders and like I said, up and coming and local officials. We're still talking about the issues. Many of the issues haven't changed.
Such as?
Education. You know, education still remains one of the primary issues in our state, not just in, I mean, all over, every one of
but
our communities.
You know, it just seems like we've been having the same conversation about education for X number of years.
I think things are getting better, but, you know, I think we still have a long way to go. And education is so tied, Kelly, as you know, to economic development, bringing new companies into our great state. I think this area has done a phenomenal job bringing new jobs and new companies into the southeastern part of the southern part of the state. But education plays a key role in that.
All right. So what can we do just briefly? For your goals through Leadership New Mexico, what would you like to see changed?
You know, I don't know. No, it's about what I'd like to see changed. I'd like to see more people educated about the issues. And then if they're educated, they can choose where they can make a difference. And that's really what we're all about.
It amazes me how many people make important decisions based on very little information, maybe something that they saw on TV or heard in a conversation from somebody as opposed to doing any research.
Absolutely.
All right. You know, Kelly, the program is out there to educate existing leaders in the state, existing leaders in their own communities. And through the program, we're given multiple ideas of possibilities of what could happen back to their individual communities and try one of these ideas. And the education and learning these potential ideas from other people is so crucial to advancement. I think New Mexico, we've been a little in the shadows of our neighboring states, because you can see that from our populations and from our politics and from our economic development.
Especially
we're trying to educate these local leaders on the issues that face us, and let's come up with some solutions, because that's the important thing, is we're trying to come up with solutions.
The last mayor's race seemed to focus quite a bit on this, the empty buildings and what we can do to attract more businesses that could employ significant numbers of people in it. I don't expect anything to change, but the message here is if we can educate people about the issues. Could you give me an example
of educating people about the issues
on an important issue that might be a game changer for us?
Oh golly, Russell, help me out here. Here we're talking. This is our 20th year in Las Cruces. We're very proud and pleased to be back again after 20 years. And when we come down to Las Cruces, we take a look at economic development. And I'm not answering your question directly, but the things that we like to look at when we come down here, because you guys are doing such a great job, Mavita and that group and the local chamber is doing a great job of bringing in new jobs. We're headed to the Union Pacific facility tomorrow afternoon.
That is that's kind of an upswing area, but I think a lot of people are frustrated that a significant number of the graduates from our university have to leave
the profession. Right, that is a big problem.
We're family-oriented. The people want their families to stay in Dona Ana if possible.
That's very true. Well, you know, oh my gosh, I just had a senior moment. I'm not even that old yet. Patty, what's going on here? it's just that we're not political. The organization is not political, but clearly one of the things that are brought to the classes over the years are a lot of the government officials, secretaries on the cabinet for the different things from economic development to tourism, which we touch in this particular things, to healthcare, to children, youth and services. All these kind of things are brought in. And when I was in the program, I graduated in 2008, which was part of the Richardson administration. Well, since 2010, we've had people from the Martinez administration. And so really, we're learning a lot of stuff about how the government's functioning to be able to work within those arenas on how to try to make some change. And of course, we're only doing somewhere between 40 and 45 people a year. So it's a very focused program. Over what, 900 graduates?
Over 900 in the core program. Just to piggyback on what Russell was saying, when we put together a group of a class, if you will, of 40 to 45 people, we try to make that group as diverse as possible. We want the dairy farmers talking to the developers. We want the oil and gas represented in our classes. And my goodness, our oil and gas friends are going through tough times right now. We want the small business entrepreneurs like Russell Allen's family's theater. We want people from all corners of the state. So, give you an example, 2004, we had 44 people from 23 communities around the state from all different walks of life. And one of our goals is to get people with different views and different opinions and different knowledge levels and educate them and really break down those barriers so that they'll work better together. We're not going to get anywhere in this state unless people reach across the street and stick out their hand and say, you know, I may disagree with you, but let's try to work together. And that's the only way we're going to make progress in this state.
All right. We're talking to Patty Comco, president of Leadership New Mexico, and Russell Allen. He's a board member. He also runs Allen Theaters in town, and he is also helping out with the
Greater Las Cruces Chamber of Commerce.
Greater Las Cruces Chamber of Commerce. Who came on the show? And I guess we've had a little turnover there at the top.
We have Bill Allen, who many people thought was my brother, who was not. He took a position back in Michigan in the same community he went to college with. We're real proud of him. I think he's gone to a good job that fits his skill set very well, and we're actively in a search process to find a new president.
He's not working at a mortuary company, is he?
No, he is not.
Okay, all right. Wondering what his skill set is.
Yeah.
Folks, we'll take a little break here and be right back. We need to remember, though, despite whatever party you're in, democracy demands a functional economy. You cannot have a democracy without a functional economy. Other than that, everything is directed by the government. 716 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 523-1450, your text line, 805-6180. I know the text line has been on injured reserve for a while, but it's back in the studio. And we're going to be back in just a moment to carry on with Leadership New Mexico. Kelly here, of course, 7:21 on the button, and I've got Patty Comco, Leadership New Mexico, and very, very grateful to have her come in, and they were persistent in trying to get on the show, and then, of course, Russell Allen. Russell Allen is just sitting here looking like you look like you just got done playing basketball.
No, I'm going to go to the gym after I do this. Try to be healthy.
You're going to go there and have not a latte, but
not a latte. We're going to run on the treadmill.
All right,
get a little sweaty.
Okay. So, we have a vision for New Mexico and for it to be prosperous. What is it about our culture that seems to almost revel or enjoy? I don't know if it's the Catholic history, having been raised Catholic, I kind of wonder about that, but there's almost like this kind of element of suffering that the Catholic Church kind of gives this value to, but I just feel like we're suffering compared to Arizona and Colorado and Texas. It doesn't make any sense.
Kelly, I don't have a real good answer. I know we've got issues in our tax structure. My husband's a tax attorney, and gross receipts tax is a big issue with bringing new business in. I mean, there are, you know, you can point to a few issues. The education system, which we talked about a little earlier, our taxes. Until we fix just some of the real fundamental things, and I don't know how you do it. I don't have a good answer. Our organization's answer is to educate people, give them the best possible education on the issue, not a D or not an R, just right straight down the middle. People are smart who go through our programs. They can make their minds up for themselves, but our job is to provide them the best quality education and then hopefully motivate them to go out and tackle the tax issues or the educational system.
I've got one application for this. We're dealing in a situation here in the city and in the county where they actually had a lawsuit. I know this between the taxes and minimum wage, Russell Allen's probably not real happy about all the stuff that's developing around here, not saying anything, rolling his eyes. But you cannot tax and spend your way out of a recession. You've got to grow businesses. And so the fact of the matter is that when the city sued the county for daring to bring in their own increase in taxation, which the city had already done, which I thought was kind of like the one mafia suing another mafia for taking their corner. Like
using the government for your own benefit.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is that Ronald Reagan said, like he said so many things well, a rising tide raises all boats. You can either try to tax your way into a better, more prosperous city, or, which is very painful, or you can grow the economy, and then that naturally produces tax fruit.
Yeah, well, you know, absolutely, taxes are necessary, unfortunately. And like Patty was saying, the tax structure in New Mexico is, because of the GRT, makes it not attractive to new business. We were kind of, you know, earlier talking about why New Mexico is kind of still in the shadow. And I think some of it is cultural. We're happy people. We're in the land of manana. We're comfortable. We like to be comfortable. And I think growth is scary. We've had a lot of people that have moved specifically to Las Cruces that have moved from very large areas. And they left there for a reason. And I think at least subconsciously, there's a little bit of reluctancy to want things to grow to that level.
All right, let me ask you,
I understand that.
Let me ask you this. As a part of a pioneer family in New Mexico, how do you look at people that move here and say, don't change anything?
Well, if you don't grow, you die. And in my business specifically, people travel. There's the internet. They see what other places are doing, and they want it where they're at. And seating in my business is a big change people are going to. And it's forcing me, not reluctantly, to do some new seating, some new new ideas within our industry, because people are seeing it in other places.
Have you thought about vibrating chairs?
Well, you know, there's a couple of three or four different ones out there. I don't know that our economy would be able to sustain the $8 a seat upcharge up and above the regular thing for those particular seats.
Maybe one row of vibrating chairs.
Well, you generally only put two rows in. So,
oh, okay.
But you know, they're $5,000 a piece, and you know, it's there. We got to make choices because, you know, specifically in Las Cruces, I mean, we're officially in a recession. We just raised minimum wage last year. At least we get another year break before that. We got our taxes have gone up. And like you were saying, we can't tax things out. We need to grow the base.
When you see two or 3,000 empty buildings, all of which could have a new business in them. What do you say to yourself?
Well, I'd say it's like when I went to Greece a few years ago. That's exactly what there was. Empty buildings and car repair places. It was unbelievable. So everybody was repairing their cars because they couldn't buy new ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've just got to grow the base. We've got to grow the base. And
we had 300 jobs that we brought in a couple of years ago in the county. And then a couple of days after that news came out, ironically, I think FERS closed down. So, I mean, we're just
right.
not living on the edge here.
Well, you know, one of the issues that I see is, and this is where everybody, no matter where you're at, and the people that come into this into the program are looking to make things better. The issues that we have is there's so many different ideas. And I know politically, I believe that there's many out there that are trying to make things better, but they just don't know how to do it.
Right. So
and that's where the education comes in.
You because, gotta have a vision.
Yeah. I mean, people need home, need housing. So the idea is we're going to build more low-income housing instead of let's build more jobs so we don't need more low-income housing. Depends on which side of the scale you're on. You know, both is helping people, but who it's helping them temporarily, but who is helping them with their self-esteem, with their advancement, their personal success?
Oprah.
But, you know, do we want 1,000 assisted living places or do we want 200? And I say we want 200 because that's 800 families that have a good income, that have jobs, that are actually producing and not taking, but they're producing and helping those other. Because you got to save yourself before you can save anybody else.
Yeah. Okay. So, folks, talking to Russell Allen of Allen Theaters, and he is on the board of Leadership New Mexico, and also helping out with the Greater Las Cruces Chamber of Commerce. And also Patty Comco. We're going to come right back. She's the president of Leadership New Mexico. We'll be right back. I've got local news for you coming up. Well, it's 7:32, and we've got Leadership New Mexico in the studio, and they've got a nice website, leadershipnm.org, and so you can communicate with them there. We've got Patty Comco, president, and Russell Allen, whose name comes up occasionally, all the time, in town. So,
Trying to make a difference. I learned it in Leadership New Mexico.
All right. You were nobody until you went through the
leadership. That's right. Nobody until I went through leadership. Thank you, Patty.
All right, Patty. So I'm looking at programs. What are some programs? How do you guys choose who goes through? Because it's a limited number of people, obviously, so there might be more applications than people get accepted. But how do you choose your participants?
Well, it's done by a selection committee of members of our board. Everybody who's on that selection committee has been through the program, so they know. We're looking for people who want to get involved, want to get engaged, have some community involvement experience in the past, want to stay in New Mexico and make a difference. We have three different programs. One is for senior leaders, our core program. We have over 900 graduates from 56 communities around the state. We have a program for 25 to 40 year olds, a wonderful program. It's in its 10th year. We have over 300 graduates in that program. And then we have a wonderful partnership with the New Mexico Association of Counties and the New Mexico Municipal League. We have over 300 graduates in that one. It's called the Local Government Leadership Program. So we're looking at all different kinds of levels of leaders and organizations in a community. We train about 100 people a year. So we've got lots of slots open every year.
Can you sponsor a child like, say, Ken Miyagashima?
Sure. Absolutely. You bet we can.
Folks, let's get a funding drive. How much is this program?
That's our least expense.
It's only three sessions. Ken would not be gone that long, but he would learn a bunch.
You know, say the first one is they just break their will. They're tied down to a chair, waterboarded.
No, it's nothing like that.
All right. So, if somebody went through, how long does it take? I mean, just could you walk us through what a typical experience might be to go to the Institute?
Sure. They're all different amounts of time. Our core program is 6 sessions over 10 months, roughly a day and a half each session, and about 7 to 8 weeks apart. We're here in Las Cruces this weekend with our core program. We'll start.
Where are you at this weekend?
We'll start this evening at the Natural History Museum downtown, and then take a visit to Tom and Jereen Hutchinson's restaurant. Jereen is a graduate of ours for dinner.
That's La Posta.
And it's fabulous. We'll be at the university tomorrow at the Domenici Center with several speakers on economic development, on venture capital, on entrepreneurship, and then we'll put everybody on a bus and take them out to the border crossing, Santa Teresa, and take a look at some issues out there, including Union Pacific. We'll visit the War Eagles Air Museum, and then Saturday we'll be back at the university with a few speakers. We'll have a speaker on film, on tourism. I think we have the Cabinet Secretary for Tourism coming down to talk to the group. So it's a day and a half. So that's kind of what a day and a half looks like. That's our core program, 6 sessions over 10 months. Our Connect program is 3 sessions over about 6 months. And our local government program is 2 sessions over about 3 months. So a various amounts of time.
And what kind of stuff do people learn, like in the classroom type of things?
We talk about the issues that face New Mexico. So when we talk about water issues, we bring in a water expert. We talk about land issues, we bring in a land expert. So we're really talking about the issues in our state. Oil and gas, great example. We bring in an oil and gas producer. When we have an issue that's controversial, we'll bring somebody, a speaker from both sides. A good example, 8 or 10 years ago, drilling at Otero Mesa was a real issue. We brought in a producer and we brought in an environmentalist just to talk about from their point of view why you should or should not drill. And the class participants are all smart. We're there to provide education, and they can make their mind up for themselves.
Right. And I might add that there's a curriculum committee that meets before each session and tries to determine what issues are still relevant from last year, what issues we should bring in for the new particular, you know, if it's healthcare, we're talking about healthcare issues, education session, there's education issues. And so this curriculum committee, which is all graduates, are going from their community and we discuss, is this issue still relevant? If it's not, we kick it out, we bring in a new one. So the program is constantly growing to be current on what the current issues are in New Mexico. So the same issues that would have been in the class 20 years ago, some of them are still there, but many of them have changed multiple times and may have even come back. I've been fortunate to be on the committee since the 2009 class. I chaired it in 2011.
Have you taught any courses? Have you, you know, led any?
Have I done? Yeah. I personally haven't, but it's because Patty won't let me. I talk too much, so. I've learned a lot. I've been going for many, many years and seeing how we change the issues. And we all meet together as a committee at the beginning of the year and really go through each session to say, is this issue still relevant? If it is, did the speaker that presented for it do a good job? Everybody's evaluated. Every speaker is evaluated, and if we think, well, maybe there's someone else that would be better, then we go. And so the program is always improving, and I've seen that growth in the last, what, I guess it's, what, not 8 years or so. And, you know, I learned by being on the committee. I'm still on the committee, and I go to different sessions. And so every time I go, I get to see old friends. But I also get to meet some new people from all over the state for each session, and I get to learn about new issues. And so, you know, I've really enjoyed being part of it, and the things that my relationship with leadership has made me a better person. I know that.
I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Do we have some movie tickets to give away on the show?
Yeah, we might be able to hook you up.
That means two.
Two? Well, we'll get them. Well, yeah. Yes,
Okay.
Kelly, I'll give you 2 movie passes to go to the movies.
Hopefully they're lifetime movie passes.
Yeah, well, beggars can't be choosers.
Leadership New Mexico, we've got Russell Allen and Patty Comco, and we'll be right back to continue on and investigate a little bit more about what they're doing to educate a better and more prosperous New Mexico. Kelly O'Connell, 740 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-6180. Your text machine is out of ICU and better than ever. It's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. This is Kara.
Hey, what's up, Kara?
Happy New Year. I was just curious on how you would apply for one of these classes. How would you engage in learning in part of the program?
You go to leadershipnm.org.
Okay.
And put in your application there.
Okay.
It's
great.
There's a thing on there for application. Did you want her to have one?
Yeah.
Which one?
I'd probably fit in local government leadership because I'm too old for the Connect 25 to 40 and too young to be a senior. So local government leadership.
Kara, you got a pen?
Yes. Yes, I do.
505-263-4155.
Okay.
And that's her own. That's Patty's. She's the president of her cell phone.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Talk to you later.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What were you saying? She's a very outgoing person. Her name is Kara. She's called in a number of times, and she's kind of like, I'm not on the left. I'm not on the right. She used to call in all the time. It's 7:43. It is 7:43, and we do have the leadership New Mexico here. And just to let you know, for your headlines today, briefly, there is a battle now with in the Democratic Party over Hillary, and there's some major fundraisers that are possibly going to start funding other candidates. In the polling for the GOP, Rubio 8%, Carson 10%, Cruz 13%, Trump 41%. He is a colossus. He is a colossus, and looking down at so he's starting to go after Hillary, and so. One other story, a science story. Scientists warn Yellowstone supervolcano could blow and kill millions of people. I think it's the largest in the world. I think they found that the magma chamber underneath it is 2 or 3 times larger. So the next time you go to Old Faithful, just remember that. So anyway.
It's beautiful up there.
Yeah, it is. It is very nice.
Until it's not.
Till it blows sky high. All right. So, Patty, how about a little bit more about your courses?
Sure. I talked a little bit about the core program, 6 program sessions over the course of about 10 months. The cost for that, by the way, Kelly, is $3,500. We do have scholarships for all of our programs. We have the Connect program is specifically for 25 to 40-year-olds. The average age over the last 10 years has been 33. And I really, truly believe that in 10 years, those 33-year-olds at 43 are going to be leading our communities and our companies around the state. That program is three sessions. They're roughly about 2.5 days long. Programs are held throughout the state. I might just talk about that for a minute. This is our 20th year in Las Cruces, and we love coming down here for the CORE program. The CORE program, I'll flip back to that one for a second. We meet in Santa Fe, Los Alamos, Las Cruces. We'll be in Hobbs in March. We'll be in Farmington in May, and then Taos in June. None of our programs are held in Albuquerque, with the exception of our one local government. The rest are held around the state. One of the things that we do when we go to a community is we try to highlight the, I call them the hidden gems. And sometimes they're not so hidden, but sometimes they are. So, for instance, when we're here, we'll go, our group is going out to White Sands Missile Range today to learn about the economic impact that White Sands has on the, not just the southern part of the state, but really, truly the entire state of New Mexico. We visit La Posta Restaurant this evening for dinner, which is, again, one of those great gems. We'll be at the university. We'll go out to the border crossing tomorrow, take a look at Union Pacific, what's been going on down there, and then have class on Saturday back at the university. So that'll give you an idea of when we go to a community, we really try to expose the group to what's going on there. Connect program, three sessions, 2.5 days long. Those sessions are held in Roswell, Las Cruces, and Los Alamos. And then our local government is the kind of the smallest of them all. It's 5 days overall, two program sessions, 2.5 days. Wonderful program for not just elected officials, appointed officials as well. It's a wonderful partnership with the New Mexico Association of Counties, the New Mexico Municipal League, the School Boards Association. And the goal there is to really get those groups working with each other, talking with each other, learning more about the issues statewide. You know, if you come from a small community, Tatum, New Mexico, you may not know what's going on up in the northwest part of the state. So we really try to get as much diversity in that group as well. So we've got municipalities, counties, and school boards all working with each other.
Sounds great. And it sounds like it's fun and you guys are getting some, going out to eat and socializing. And then a big part of it is also getting to meet people, movers and shakers and such. And so besides the time in the classroom, it sounds like kind of a holistic approach.
That's exactly our goal. Yeah, it is.
Right. I might add, we've been talking about issues. We're educating about issues. Well, in the CORE program, they're very focused. We've talked about economic development, what's happened here in Las Cruces, but we have an education session where the main focus is on education. And then there's the healthcare session where it's all about healthcare and how that relates to New Mexico. We do, what do we call the one? Energy, water and energy,
environment, natural resources,
up in Farmington, to where we learn about those particular issues. And probably one of the neatest one is the graduating session where we learn about government services and the court systems and things to
and
about
taxes.
And taxes. So it's when we say issues, our program is teaching many, many different issues, and they're all centric to New Mexico. But some of our speakers come from outside of New Mexico that bring in, that way we're not in a bubble. We're getting, what are they doing over there and trying to make difference, but specifically in education. That was one is that really is different everywhere. And we have one woman that's been coming. How long has Katie been coming for?
About 8 years. Katie right. Haycock from Washington, D.C. She comes in and talks about how New Mexico measures up with the states surrounding us. And it's absolutely fascinating. We've made some growth and we made some strides, but got a ways to go.
Got a long way to go. Well, when you're right next to the most dynamic economic state in the nation, which is Texas.
Yeah, it's we could definitely learn a lot from Texas. There's a lot of things we don't want to learn from Texas. I've been there a few times. But we need to stop being in a bubble. And that's what I think one of the issues that that New Mexico has and that is. We've been living in a bubble. And, it's the leadership of the state that has caused that to happen.
And
whether it's the private sector leadership or if it's the political leadership, I believe they've kept us in a bubble. And Shame on them.
And also, we're at the whim of bureaucracy a lot of times because we're very dependent on government jobs.
Well, yeah. I mean, in New Mexico, and some part of the stuff we learn is we're ridiculous on licensing people. You have to go through all this amount of licensing to be able to do the job, where if we didn't have to go through the stuff, you already know the job, you do the job. There's just layer upon layer in New Mexico that has caused us to be in that bubble. It's hard to break into. We are doing a remodel in Carlsbad and had an outside contractor that's licensed in New Mexico doing it, but they hired a framer to come do the job. And when they got here, they weren't licensed in New Mexico. Set us back a month trying to find a new framer to come in and do stuff. And that's the issue that we find, that private sector's finding, is that you can't move at a decent speed to accomplish what you need to do so that you have money coming back in instead of money going out. And it seems like our local leaders just don't understand time is money, and
or maybe they don't care. Maybe they
that could be the case, and so money will flow where it's least resistance.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's one of our issues that we have in New Mexico, and that we discuss in this economic development session, is that the money, it's too hard to get into the state of New Mexico.
We're talking to Russell Allen at Allen Theaters, and he's also on the Leadership New Mexico board. And Patty Comco is the president. She's here, and we'll be right back to finish her up.
The world, and I know this is turning. While my guitar gets
all right, so we're finishing up here with Leadership New Mexico, and I have Patty Comco here, the president, and Russell Allen, who's a graduate and a board member. And so what do you think 2016 holds for the state from what you've seen? What are some of the changes we can – Russell?
I always want to start the year off positive. It's a new slate. We have in Las Cruces specifically, we have a new city council. They have reached out to the Chamber of Commerce to where's the ideas, what can we do to change, to make it better. We're here as the Chamber anytime. The state of New Mexico has got all of the House is up, all of the Senate is up, so the entire leadership of our legislature is up at the end of this year. Do we want to continue down the road that we've been going down, or is it time for a change? And really,
it's time for a change.
I agree. It's time for a change. And there's, 80, 85% of the people out there that are just trying to make a living. They don't have time to pay attention to what's going on because they're just trying to make a living, and they're being taken advantage of. And shame on those that are taken advantage of, but that 85% have got to open their eyes and become educated on what's happening in their world and show up and vote, because that's the only way it's going to change.
There's an article here. I'd mentioned it earlier. Most Americans are one paycheck away from the street. Some 63% of people can't deal with a $500 emergency. Most people don't have significant savings, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. And if you don't have a growing economy where you have jobs, then your head's down trying to survive. You cannot make change if you're just trying to survive.
Politics is a luxury.
And that's you got to carve out a little bit of time. You got to carve out a little bit of time to be aware of what's happening in your world and what you can do, because you know what? You're going to have opportunities to vote. And yes, your vote does count.
Absolutely. And we saw some of these city elections. The city elections are decided
18 and 11 votes. I mean,
and one of the people that and this is not to rub it in, but one of the people stood me up twice on the show. I believe that person would have been elected.
That makes a difference. Yeah. I mean, it's But the one thing that happened in the election is from 4 years ago, there's more voters than last time, which is unheard of. And the needle moved 9 percentage points back to the middle. And that's huge. People are paying attention.
Well, we're just summing it up here. So, Patty, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Kelly.
And it's great to know that you guys are trying to make a difference, are making a difference. And, Russell, should people go see this crazy new movie?
Which one? There's a whole bunch of them. Star Wars?
Yes.
You know, if you liked the original Star Wars, this made me feel just like the original Star Wars. Very filled story. I really enjoyed it. But there's lots of other movies that are good.
There are other good movies. Okay. So thanks for the job that Leadership New Mexico is doing. Be in touch with them, leadershipnm.org. And if you're interested, especially if you're involved in any leadership capacity in the state or in Dona Ana, then consider putting in an application there. Sounds like a great program. And we'll get you guys back on the show soon.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Good.
Good to see you, Russell.
Thanks, Kelly.
All right, folks. We'll take you out here and come back in 22 hours. Have a great day. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, have a great day. Talk.